Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Good to have you all with us here today. Once again, we have with us during this fun drive at 410-319-8888, we have our dear friend and colleague, Marshall Bell. Marshall Bell, of course, is host of his own show, Midday Magazine, and author of his, not the latest novels he has, is Baltimore Blues, Harm City, and we talked about in the air once more. He came with us especially today to help us on this drive. Good to see you, brother. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding, Mark. Thanks for having me, man.
It's always good to have you here.
It's a pleasure, man. Pleasure.
You may have to make you a regular presence on our roundtables as well.
I'm waiting, eagerly awaiting my invitation.
Maybe next week we'll start.
I would love to, man.
All right.
I got an opinion about some things.
Definitely. Really?
Yeah.
You mean a Bell in Baltimore has an opinion about something?
I have a strong opinion about something. And not afraid to share it, man. Absolutely, absolutely. So, sure.
So what's your latest opinion besides your book?
Oh, man. I'm just sitting back watching things develop. I'll put it like that. I mean, everybody's, of course, is looking at D.C. right now. But I'm also looking at the state races here in Maryland. You know, my background is in politics, of course. Just seeing how things are working out. I think next year is going to be very fascinating.
You know, I was wondering that when I was thinking about you coming on today, because I know we'll have to talk about the book here, but I want to because it's a great book.
Sure.
But I'm wondering what you think about two of your characters as Cameron and Chance. Cameron's kind of the lead character in this book.
Sure.
Young man who tries to make it through the streets of Appleton and around Coppin State University to make it on these hard streets out there.
Mm-hmm.
And his sister Chance, who ends up in the world of prostitution. Of course, things change for her as well during the course of the book.
Sure.
So I'm curious what you think makes a world for the Cameron and Chances who live by the thousands in our city, struggling to get through.
You know, obviously, where we've come to get to where we are in 2013 does not happen overnight. I mean, obviously, it's come from decades, even centuries, you know, of our experience here in this country. It comes from a lot of different things. But the point where three young people are basically raising themselves with a mother who has passed and a father who's not around. And of course, you have to read the book to find out why, of course. It's the culmination of a lot of societal problems, economic issues, disenfranchisement. I mean, it's all the societal ills are poured. This is where the rubber meets the road. This is where it really happens, where we need this is where the end of the road, so to speak, you know. And when you look on TV and you see the glamorous life of, and America has plenty of glamorous people, the folks who are doing very well. But this is where it ends, right here. This is, I hate to say the bottom of the barrel, but all the ills of America, the problems are shown in this story. Now, but understand, there's also a hopeful side to this as well, because I don't want folks to believe that, you know, there is no hope for children who are in that situation. But the reality is that society has failed in many ways these young folks in our inner cities and really in all the different areas of the country, but particularly in our inner cities. And they're then left with raising themselves and trying to struggle and trying to find a way. But if there's one message I try to leave with folks when they read this book is that, like I said, there is hope. But the hope ultimately depends on gentlemen like yourself, like myself, who've been through some things, who've experienced some things and who've made some mistakes, but who know how to get out of their condition, help folks get out of their condition. But we got to reach back and help these young folks and show them a different way of living.
You know, I was thinking about that also in terms of just what the city faces. You know, when you look at shows we're going to be doing next week probably, on there are two institutions, one relatively new and one very old in the black community that come out of the African-American community in Baltimore that are both threatened at the moment, their survival is threatened. Arena Players could go up and under, the oldest continuing black theater in the United States of America,
yeah,
because of a water bill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have the Reginald F. Lewis Museum,
yeah,
that is facing dire straits. I mean, it says something about the kind of where we put our investments.
Yeah, well, you know,
and
I'm
what's
really,
important.
Yeah, and both the situations are a little bit different. You know,
yes, they are different.
You know,
but there's a connection.
There's a connection, sure. And ultimately, they're different. Okay. In fact, actually, I'll be having my show tomorrow. I'll be talking a special show about the Arena Playhouse because I really want to show some light on that.
Yep.
I'm trying to bring the attorney to come on so we can talk about how we can help them out. With the Reginald F. Lewis Museum, it tears at my heart, you know, because this should be the crowning jewel in Baltimore City and even in the state and even in the country. I mean, it's a beautiful facility. different, like I said, there's different causes for why they're in the condition they are now, but ultimately we got to support our art because it is our culture. And it is our, it reflects our past and definitely reflects our future as well. So, you know, I wish them both well, and I do believe they both can recover from the current conditions, but it's going to take the community support, you know, to get them over the hump. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that something has to happen here. I mean, we can't. To me, to allow arena players to go under
would be ridiculous. I mean, it's a trap. But you know what, Mark? The thing about it is, like, when you, I'm from West Baltimore. When I drive up and down Pennsylvania Avenue, I don't, you know, I'm 45, so I don't remember those days. You know, and you guys, your age, and right, and my father, that was right. You know, that was part of the scene. That was it. You know what I mean? But I have no memory of that. The arena playoffs is kind of a vestige of that time. We have to make sure that it survives and that it thrives.
It should be. A cultural center of the community and all of Baltimore, but in that community, a cultural center that keeps it alive. And
we don't have a lot of these, you know, so we gotta hold on to them, man.
It needs to be a place for kids to learn theater and learn the arts. It needs a place to bring name performers in to do special workshops. Right. It needs to be a place that has its own season, that, you know, with professional and amateur actors working together. Mm-hmm. I mean, So it's
they've done some of that now. Let's understand, you know, because I know Rodney and some of the folks over there, they do a lot of that, but they need to do more, of course.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back. We're going to have to go to Pledge Central and see where we are and let you have a copy of Marshall Bell's book for a special
signed
pledge.
Copy.
Signed copy. 410-319-8888. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here with Marshall Bell, talking about his book, Baltimore Blues, Harm City. And Marshall, let's go back to the beginning and talk about why you decided to write this book about these three young people and their struggle through the streets of Baltimore and the Appleton neighborhood.
Yeah, well, you know, I tell you, the first book, like you mentioned earlier, this is my second novel. My first book is called The Darkest Secret. Now, that was set in Washington, D.C., it was more of a political thriller, drama.
Which is where you went to college at Howard University.
I went to Howard in D.C. Right. So, right. You know, it's a story that I'd had in me for a while. It really kind of talked more about supposedly post-racial politics in the era of Obama or whatever. It was very deep, very heavy. And I think a lot of folks might have missed it in a sense. So I wanted to bring a story back home to Baltimore that told a more of a gritty story about what's really, really going on. I mean, sometimes we see some of these shows, I'm cool with The Wire and all that stuff, but I wanted to center it on one single family in one single circumstance that was going through their struggles, and to give folks a real idea of how kids are really trying to eke out a life here in the streets of Baltimore. And I centered it in at North Avenue and Appleton because my family actually is from that area. In fact, my grandmother still has a residence on Appleton Street. And my mom stays there with her to take care of her. So I'm familiar with the neighborhood, you know. And I'm familiar with many of the stories that are in the book because one of the essential themes throughout this book is the drug addiction and the drug trade that's in that area. And for my own, I'm in recovery myself. So the stories that I'm telling in this book, I know, you know, I'm not, you know, fictionalized, you know, I'm not just making this stuff up. These are real stories from my own experiences, you know, that I poured into the book.
I mean, and it says a lot that there are a number of people have been on the show saying one line you just said that's very similar, which their parents and grandparents still living on places like Bloom Street and Appleton Street and Chester Street, who have been there since the 50s and 40s, living in the same home.
Same house, yeah.
And watching the changes in those neighborhoods and to the children in those neighborhoods.
You know what's so interesting? I'm glad you mentioned that. It's fascinating when you see how a neighborhood can change and go down. You know, when you go through Baltimore and you see vacant houses after vacant houses, you wonder, like, how did that happen? Well, I'm seeing it happen in this particular neighborhood. It's very gradual, and it's really quite remarkable when you can step outside of it and just see as it happens. About 10 years ago, there was a fire on the block. Actually, there was a couple fires in this particular block. I believe it was an arsonist. Nobody was ever caught. But the domino effect started happening. Somebody died next to my grandmother. The family never did anything until they had to board up the house. You know, across the street, there was another fire. There was like three fires on this one block. Down the street, and somebody else passed away because these are older folks, like you mentioned. And all of a sudden, you look up 10, 12 years later, and there are like eight boarded up houses on the block. Then you got another investor investing in a house, and he chops it up, and he puts a rooming house. And then you got a problem. I'm not trying to be blanket statement that all rooming houses are bad houses, but this one was, and they put some troubled characters in there. And all of a sudden you got some drug traffic on the block. And it's very gradual, it's very insidious, very subtle, and it's hard to stop it because, particularly when you're living in it, it's just happening. You know what I mean? It's happening. If you were to leave and come back 10 years later, you'd be like, oh, my God, what happened? But when you're living there, it happens so gradually.
I mean, it's, you know, when I was, I think about that all the time when I drive through these streets, and I having grown up here, and my dear friend Edwin Johnson, who used to be a city councilman for a while retired auto worker, political activist in the community, and he lived on the east side, and we hung out a lot when we were in our, before we were teenagers, in his neighborhood over by Faith Baptist Church in East Baltimore. And I was driving there with my producer one day to do a story, actually, with him, and I looked, I said, you don't realize that every house we're passing here, these houses were filled, every house was filled with a family.
Yes, they were.
Each one of these houses were working-class people, poor working-class people, steel workers, people who worked in box factories, people who rode the Arab carts to make a living. Every one of these houses had a father and a mother. And people were living in these homes. And we see the deindustrialization of America and not caring what happens to working class communities that have just destroyed these neighborhoods. And the stories of your characters are what has come out of that destruction.
Exactly.
And we're going to leave it right there because we have to take a break and come back and pick up with Marshall Bell and his book, Baltimore Blues, a book you need. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I'm here with Marshall Bell talking about his book, Baltimore Blues, Harm City. Of course, is a radio talk show host of his own, Midday Magazine, and a political activist.
Yes.
So where do we leave off, Marshall?
We were talking about struggling neighborhoods, we were also going to talk about the bright side.
The bright side.
In the book. And what I want folks to know is when you do read the novel, you'll see some familiar sights and sounds, and there's scenes that take place at Lexington Market, you know, on Coppin State's college campus. There's some characters that you'll probably be familiar with. In fact, the barber, who is a central character in the novel, I'm sure you guys remember the barber, Lenny?
Lenny Clay.
Yeah, of course, Lenny Clay.
I love Lenny Clay.
I patterned his character after Lenny Clay. Okay, so
there's
some characters here. There's some scenes here, some sights that people will be familiar with, they can identify with, and they can relate to. But like I said, this is an uplifting book. It's a hopeful book. It's not a depressing book. It's told in that context, but understand that I believe in our kids. I believe in our city. I believe in our neighborhoods. I believe we can turn this thing around. But we're all going to have to chip in. You know, we can't depend on the police department or the politicians or even the spiritual community. We all got to do our part now. You know, including men like myself, like I said earlier, reaching back and showing these young folks how to live and how to conduct themselves and walk through life like men and women and how to be successful.
So what do these other characters say to you in your piece? When you look at characters in your book like Rock and Wayne from the gang, the Payback Crew. I mean,
they're necessary to tell the story, you know, because they move the story along and they provide some of the conflict in the story. Obviously, they're part of that environment that tries to pull some of these young kids, particularly young men, into that world. But I try to put more focus on, like I said, like the professor and the barber and folks like that who are trying to help the young man get out of his circumstance. But they're real. Rock and Wayne are real, and they are everywhere. I mean, let's be honest. You know, they are. But I don't blame them necessarily. I mean, I do believe we all have a choice in life, of course, but they have chosen to be drug dealers because that is what they know. If you remember, one of the characters I mentioned in the book, that one of his earliest memories is his father teaching him how to cut up dope. You know what I mean? So that's all that he knows. I believe that, and this is going to sound a little harsh, but for some folks, it's tough to turn them around. I think we really have to concentrate on our young men and women before they get to, I hate to say that, because that's going to sound like I'm giving up on folks, and I'm not. But I think that we have to put a lot of emphasis on our younger kids in that 12, 13, 14, 15, because that's when they're starting to make decisions that could affect them for the rest of their lives. Their brains are starting to develop, how they're viewing the world, and that they can be infused with that sense of hopelessness. And by the time they're 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, rocking wiener in their mid-20s, you know, it's very difficult to turn them around, you know, and some of them are hardened criminals at that point. I mean, that's just keeping it real.
One of the things that strikes me about the book you wrote, also with the characters, is that what people face is very real. I mean, two things really strike me. One is when Cameron is being sought after by the gang. They want to get him because they think he snitched on him.
Right.
That stuff is so real.
Yeah.
Kids who just out of nowhere just are thrust into this world just because they live in it. They're trying to avoid it and can't because they just get stuck and they have to deal. I mean, people don't realize why so many kids who make it stopped by the police or in schools that just carry a knife or carry some kind of weapon are carrying it because they're scared.
It's a necessity.
Because they are scared and they want to need to survive, and people don't realize that. And I think the other thing about her sister Chance is that all the women I've known who have been in prostitution, I've known a lot of women who've been in the street. And a lot of women on the show we've talked to have been in the street. Most of them want to get out of the street.
They don't want to be there. Right.
This is what they get sucked into because whether it was a drug addiction or whether it's because they couldn't pay the rent and had to take care of their kids and had to turn a trick to make sure they had baby formula.
Right.
That's not a joke.
It's not a joke.
That happens.
And they don't want to do it. You know, like, I'm glad you mentioned Chance because this story is very important, man. And a lot of times
we're going to stop with Chance and come back to this when we take
sounds good.
Okay, gotcha. It's like a movie serial. We'll be right back. Go on to Pledge Central. Don't go away. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here with Marshall Bell. Baltimore Blues is his book. He's also a midday talk show host and a guest on this program and Anthony McCarthy's program a lot as a political commentator because that's part of his other life as well.
Yes, indeed.
Where do we leave off, Mr. Bell?
We were talking about the struggles of one of the central characters in the book.
Cameron?
Chance.
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 The girl.
Yeah, the girl. Now she's, like we mentioned, she's about 21 years old and she's taking care of her two younger brothers, and she's fallen into the role basically of caretaker and really kind of de facto mother. But the real struggle there for her is what she has to do in order to take care of her two younger brothers. And it's a story, man, that's played out over and over again. See, now a lot of folks, when they think of prostitution, they think that they're women on the track, on the strip, but not in the hood. Often these are young ladies who have what they call sponsors. You know what I'm talking about. These
we used to call them pimps.
Well, the older guys who are taking advantage of young ladies, all right?
Right.
I mean, don't understand, it's a symbiotic relationship. You know, everybody gets something out of it, you know. But she's a young woman, and she has older guys who come to call on her, you know. But it's not what she wants to do. But she's forced into the situation because, let's face it, the social networking, this social net in this country is lacking. And, you know, we would think that children wouldn't have to do this to survive, but they do often.
And every neighborhood has a man in it, or a woman, but in this case, a man in it, like the barber that you patterned after. One of Baltimore's unsung heroes.
Yes, man, yes.
Lenny Clay.
Yes.
Who's a house of natural.
Yes. Exactly.
He's been a barber in this community forever. Yeah. All the most successful black men in the city used to come to his barber, and still do, come to his barbershop in the middle of the hood to get their hair cut. And he did that on purpose because he wanted young men on the corner to see these successful men coming in to get their hair cut.
Absolutely.
And he has the walls lined with Angela Davis and Malcolm X posters and pictures. And he's this guy who's been through the streets himself. He was a bookie, used to run numbers, and then he went in to become legit and saw this barbershop and was like a godfather in the community.
Right.
He was brutally attacked by the police, by the way, several years back. Remember when they broke his arm?
Yeah.
Which was, you know, to have one of our elders treated like that was just an abomination. Yeah. But he is just one of the most beautiful people in the world.
Yeah.
And when I was reading the book, I kept thinking about Lenny Clay, and I'm really happy to know that was who
yes,
you patterned him after.
Absolutely.
Because he was an amazing human being, Lenny Clay.
Well, he embodies, as you would tell me, some parts of the story I wasn't even familiar with, what I'm talking about as far as those of us who have seen some things, experienced some things, you know, and we've made it through. We survived. Okay, we survived. But now what? You know, you can go on living with your life, get a nice house out in the county, whatever, or you can stay in the community and try to help somebody else. And I believe ultimately, isn't that what life is really all about? I mean, ultimately, isn't it? It is not just about us. And it's not just about our own children, but it's about those kids who don't have fathers or don't have mothers. We got to reach back and show them, you know, that they can be successful in life, that they don't have to go down that route. And that's really what the characters in this book try to do. They try to show Cameron and Chance a different way of living, you know, and trying to keep them to be positive and be hopeful, but also concrete steps in order to be successful. Let's not just fill these kids with just some, you know.
We do a lot of harm to our kids, but making them feel they can do things they can't do as well.
Right, but we need to show them the steps. Right. When I talk to kids, I talk to a lot of high schools around town. I tell them, okay, you have a vision for where you want to be in 5 or 10 years. Well, let's talk about how you're going to get there. I mean, real steps. What paperwork do you have to fill out, or what classes do you need to take? You want to be a nurse? How do you become a nurse? You know what I mean? But we as adults, we can show children how to get to where they want to go. Otherwise, Mark, otherwise, we're leaving them to the streets, who will gladly take them in, and then they'll be in the, you know, the life that they'll lead after that.
The street corner is its own addiction.
It is. It is. A lot of people are not just addicted to the drugs.
It's the corner life.
It's the lifestyle.
Because it's something to do. It's something to do.
People know your name.
It's the mythology that you're actually free. Yeah. That you do what you want.
Right.
It's the mythology of individual freedom that they have on the corner. They think they have that they don't have.
And it's not real freedom. Exactly.
It's not real freedom.
Right.
You know, exactly. And because they're addicted to the moment of this instant pleasure and hanging out and being loud and being crazy and smoking a joint and drinking this and chasing some girl or chasing some boy or whatever that is. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And then they get lost and sucked into it because it's also so thrilling for somebody younger who has nothing else in their life. Yeah. To be able to do a little hustle, to lead a little critical piece of fast life, to throw them dice, to do whatever it is.
Right.
Because it's fun at the moment.
It is.
It's a high.
Right.
Even if you don't get high, it's a high.
It is. It's right? an itself a high.
So, it's a place to be somebody.
Right.
But the problem is that then you, but see, you know what? The problem is that
place
20,
to be somebody.
10 or 20 years later, you start, you grow up and you realize, wow, I didn't get anything out of that.
Exactly.
I didn't produce anything.
Yeah.
Other than maybe perhaps kids or whatever. I didn't make anything out of my life. And part of the reason why I turned my own life around is because at a certain point you say, gee, is this how I want to be remembered?
Right.
You know, I have kids now. I want to be able to leave something for them. But the idea in the book is that we want to show kids to turn their lives around a little earlier than maybe some of us who have made mistakes. On my own show, I have folks who are ex-offenders. And they're ready to tell the story because they want to give back and hopefully direct kids in the right direction before they lose 10 or 15 years of their life, you know, making bad decisions.
And we'd have a lot more strong ex-offenders and ex-addicts in our community making a difference in their lives and lives of people around them if we would invest in them.
Yes.
So they come out with jobs, they come out with a skill to help people in this community. And so many men you meet inside and women you meet inside those prison walls, they need to be in a community, A, but B, they want to help.
Yes.
They want to make the place better. They want to, people to learn from their lives.
Right.
But we don't invest or trust in them.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, this is what we need to do.
It makes sense. It's a smart investment. I mean, think about the option of not investing in someone letting them live their life and being a drag on society, okay, or if they are in prison, the money that's spent there, or you spend, what is it called, an ounce of?
Prevention is worth a
pound of cure.
Right?
The same idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you invest in the front end so you don't have to deal with the problems on the back end.
We are going to take a brief break and go over to Pledge Central here and come back to our friend Marshall Bell, Baltimore Blues. And don't go away. Stay with us. And while you're thinking about it, 410-319-8888. All right. Here we are, back here with Marshall Bell.
Yes, indeed.
I just ran from Pledge Central. I'm out of breath.
That's funny. I like how Pledge Central seems like it's somewhere else.
I know.
Yeah.
All right, awesome. Marshall Bell.
Yes. I'm having a good time here, man.
It's really good to have you here.
Yeah,
Baltimore Blues.
I appreciate the opportunity really to share the book and just to sit down with you guys because that's really what it's all about. I mean, I've been texting in between segments my son, Jordan, who is a freshman here at Morgan State University.
All right.
Of course, he has no idea where the building is. I don't know where it is, you know. But I said, just stay where you are. I'll find you, you know what I mean? Because I know he wants to see me because, what, he wants money. Of course they do. He's a freshman, you know what I'm saying? But it's all good. But, you know, I really
that's
welcome.
That's why that's nothing for a parent is ATM.
Yes. That's pretty much what I'm saying. When I told him I was here, he's like, oh, really, Dad? Oh, really? I was like, oh, boy, I know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
He's broke. But it's okay. I know we were all broke when we were in school.
That's
but,
right.
But, you know, like I was saying, is that the book is about Baltimore. This effort is about Baltimore. It's about giving back. And I'm just happy to be a part of this, man. I really am, you know.
Well, I think that what you're doing is important, both as, I mean, you've taken you know, your life, which has been an interesting life, because you grew up in a middle class, upper middle class home. Your dad was one of the great dentists in the community, Dr.
Still
Bell.
Is, yeah.
Still is. Everybody knows Dr. Bell.
Sure.
You know, and it's not always just about the class you come from, because it's easy to fall off.
It is, man. Yeah, I tell the story, like the city paper had done a piece on me in my novel a few months ago. And I tell you, I didn't know they would put all that in the piece, but it was okay. It is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But something I had said in there that the reporter had recorded me saying, I didn't start messing up until I came home from college, oddly enough. But I made some bad decisions, you know. But we all can make bad decisions. It's a part of growing up, mm-hmm. you know. But I keep going back to this. Hopefully older folks can, you know, shorten the learning curve a little bit and help try to keep us from making too many bad decisions, because we're all going to err along the way. You know, that's what young folks do.
Right.
Of course, I did it after I came out of Howard. And
because we live in a place sometimes that I think is the culture we live in is not a forgiving culture.
It's not.
You know?
Well, people love the story of redemption.
Yes.
They do.
Yeah.
They want to see folks.
The triumph of the human spirit.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny how this culture we live in is.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, it seems like folks love to see people fall, but then they also love to see people come back.
Exactly.
You know, I think we do have a forgiving spirit here in some respects, you know what I mean? But it's a tough, you know, you make a bad decision and, you know, your whole life can take a direction, man, that you never expected.
And also, you know, I think there's always a constant battle. We can't get into this now, but there's always a constant battle in America over the different cultures in our society and how they respond to things.
Yeah.
I mean, the African American world and some other worlds, even the Native American world, something I can think of, are very forgiving cultures.
Yes.
You know, come back. You know, we all stumble and fall.
Sure.
Nice.
As opposed to the kind of very puritanical, rigid, you made a mistake, you got to pay for it, and you're going to jail for 15 years.
Yeah, a lot of that's built on hypocrisy, too. Because the same folks that are wagging their finger at somebody else are doing dirt that, you know, hasn't come to light. You know, but that's a part of, you know.
That's part of it.
I'm not going to get into all that. Because
We will one day, though.
Exactly.
Because we need to get into it.
Exactly.
So you're working on a new book?
I am, man. And the new book is interesting because it's actually based on some stuff that I do on Facebook. Strangely enough, I do a lot of inspirational stuff on Facebook. And I said to myself, wow, I need to put some of this stuff together into a book, you know. So I'm kind of playing with the idea of doing more of an inspirational type of book. Because I've done two fictional books. They've been very successful. But I want to do something from a different perspective this time. We'll see how it works out.
Well, I mean,
I'm in no hurry because this came out last year, so I'm
cycle. And it still has life. People are still talking about the book. You're still getting talked about because of the book.
Yeah.
You know, I think it touches on stuff that's important. Right. I think that people sometimes don't want to address it. Some people, like, hated The Wire.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
In some ways, but because they didn't want to. But the reality is that your book and The Wire does touch on a reality that we have to deal with, and we can't ignore it.
Exactly. It is there, and the stories need to be told, but I guess
we'd rather ignore it and move people out and gentrify a neighborhood and forget people over there.
I just hope that when we do have stories like this, that we always also try to show a positive side, too. You know, I don't want folks to always be concentrating on the negative. Not that that's not reality, but there are pearls, there are positive stories within the community, and that's really what I try to give exposure to in the book. You know, even within the world, the scene in Lexington Market is, you go down to the market, there's all kind of crazy stuff going on. But guess what? There's also some good people there.
Right.
Those shop owners, man, and then the folks go there on a Friday when they got the bands playing. You can see nothing but love and community there, you know. Even if in outside people are trying to sell you or buy whatever they're trying to sell and buy.
A watch or whatever.
You know what I mean? But there's positive stuff here in the community.
One of the things you see in the Lexington Market is you see the different parts of Baltimore convene because the people on the street, whether it's on Utah Place or Packer, you know, and right around Lexington Market, these are people who are living on the edge of society.
Yes.
People who have lost almost everything they've had. People trying to struggle to survive. So who wants to be out in the street hustling?
No.
Yeah. To ask for money or to hustle a little bit here, hustle a little bit there. Right. People don't want to live like this.
Of course they don't. Yeah.
And so, and inside is this place where people can buy things and sell things, and it's like almost like the doors are shut. People are locked out there.
Right.
And so what people would like to do in the city is to lock those people out and push them out of the way to rejuvenate Lexington Market for all the people with money and forget these other people ever existed.
Right. But in a
That's
sense,
the problem.
Lexington Market is a microcosm of Baltimore. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You see business people there in the lunch break.
Right.
Not enough, but you see folks from all over the city.
Yeah.
You see folks who got some issues, some folks who are doing well. But I love the environment there because it's community. Mm-hmm. And it is Baltimore in its truest sense. Absolutely.
No, it absolutely is. I think your book brings that to life, I think.
Well, I paint a really good picture in that scene.
You do a very good picture.
I think you really get a feel for it.
At the election to Mark scene.
Yeah.
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the Appleton neighborhood, with Coppin State University on one side.
Yeah, it's a dichotomy there, right? Down the street, you got education and but the community itself is tough.
Because what it represents, Morgan State University, like most of the kids, are coming from out of Baltimore who go here, the majority of kids at the university, which is great.
Yeah.
New York and D.C., Prince George's County, which is great. Coppin State University, kids who are coming out of Baltimore City schools who are looking for a place to go end up at Coppin.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's a place, when you look at it, of hope, especially when you look at it in terms of the street, the contradictions that exist between the two.
Yes.
You know, that's
exactly the picture I was trying to paint, that even Coppin Heights is a tough community.
Right.
Mondawmin, tough community. But within that is a pearl, and that's Coppin State. People trying to better themselves.
Mondawmin is a working class community trying to keep itself alive.
Yeah, and I live in Mondawmin.
And I always love that neighborhood. So anyway, Marshall Bell, thank you so much, brother.
I've enjoyed it. Thank you, Mark.
Always good to have you with us.
I'll be here a little later on, too.
Yeah, and you're going to be back on Anthony McCarthy's show. We can't get enough of Marshall Bell today.
Hey, that's beautiful.
We're going to run over to Pledge Central. Don't go away. Quickly.